Actually, some of these things, some of these thoughts rather, might be explained by Crusader Kings 3, which I'm playing at the moment, where essentially, like, celibacy is the only option for kind of, you know, like maintaining the grasp of your empire and not spawning too many heirs.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
We can also cut that out. That was terrible.
Welcome to the AI Business Podcast. This is episode 10. We've made it to episode 10.
Woo!
Whoop, whoop.
Wait, has it been 2 weeks? 3 weeks?
It's been too long.
You're a father, man. You've lost track of time. You know, if we're not your child, you don't care about us anymore. I can't sleep anymore. Don't feel safe.
Wait, what? Wait, what?
Okay.
I'm with Max Molax, our global editor.
Hello.
I'm also with the deputy editor of DCD. Now explain to the folks at home what DCD stands for.
Data center dynamics, because, you know, data centers, they're not often dynamic, but we put the dynamic in those data centers.
Right, you put the energy.
Yeah, we put the energy
into data center.
And
into
we produce a lot of waste heat in the process.
And I'm Tian, the video producer. I think that's still my title.
You're the showrunner. We were going through this. You're the man of the hour, or sometimes hour and a half. And yeah, you're all-around producer. You produce things. You produce the child. You produce a podcast, you produce videos, producer.
And can I say this? Podcast is more work than producing a child.
Yeah, especially when you
requires more editing. It requires taking out a lot of ums and
Speaking of launching things badly.
Gosh.
If you have followed the podcast for any amount of time, you know that we're quite pessimistic about the news. But like last week, something actually incredible happened. An evil company didn't get as much money as it hoped for. The company in question is Palantir, sort of like famous for essentially doing all the things sort of like, you know, like your usual tech companies don't want to do: surveillance, you know, like data analytics for immigrant detention centers, that kind of stuff. Palantir has no morals, considers itself a warrior in the culture war. They recently moved their headquarters from Silicon Valley to Denver, Colorado, because apparently that's where real Americans live.
You're not a real American, Tian.
Yeah, you don't care. I'm not in the Heartland, as they speak.
Yeah.
Heartland.
In the eyes of Palantir, you are the enemy. You're exactly the kind of liberal do-gooder that they would like to kind of like...
Even though that is where they live.
For the last couple of years, Palantir has been gearing towards an initial public offering. Like, the number they were playing with from sort of about 2016 onwards was 20 to 40 billion valuation. So they finally went public, not in a traditional way. They didn't do an APO. They did a direct listing, which essentially allows all the current shareholders, which are presumably in this case, you know, like founders, employees, to cash in on their shares in a sudden windfall. So they did that. Priced the shares $10. On Friday, close of trade, they were worth $9.50. Essentially, Palantir bombed. Peter Thiel and Alex Karp both got about 100 mil richer, according to Forbes. They made less money than they expected to. And the thing is, technical glitches on one hand, where people supposedly weren't able to sell their shares. And just like, we don't know how real that is, but like, that's what Palantir were complained about. And at the moment, it actually trades above $10, because we have to mention that. So, you know, like, 10-20.
Well, you're not getting, Max, the beauty of Palantir isn't its software. It isn't its AI tools. It isn't any of that. It's connections, human connections.
Mm.
Right? And that's why, like, if you have shares in Palantir, it's massively tied to this election, because Peter Thiel, of course, well, the only real, like, techie person to openly back Trump, you know, spoke for him at the Republican National Committee back in 2016, gave him money, may have done other things. And he benefited from that. So all these Palantir people got jobs in government and still have jobs in government. So like, becoming the CTO of the White House is quite what you'd assume would be a hard job. Becoming the guy in charge of research and engineering for the entire military, you think would be quite a difficult job to get. The same guy has both of those jobs, which is very unusual. And that same guy has essentially no job experience other than working for Peter Thiel and having a degree in philosophy and Greek history.
Couldn't a company like this just don't go public? Wouldn't that be easier for them?
The problem is they wanted money. They need to expand. This is obviously an incredibly competitive field where everyone who works at these companies gets paid way too much. And to sustain that kind of burn rate, especially when you're not a profitable company, you have to go public and get some more shares and get a nice big boost of money.
And do you see a scenario where public opinion and other and fellow investors like you and me, well, I guess not you and me, but the Wall Street people, do you see the public opinion will have to say in the company in the future?
Yeah, they're a bad company, but there are tons of bad companies. You can buy shares in companies that just sell guns to like foreign countries that we know do war crimes. You can buy shares in companies that are committing environmental disasters at like a magnitude that there's no human brain can comprehend,
and they will make money.
And they will buy people will buy shares in them.
Like the market looked at it and it found Palantir wanting. Like seriously, those shares are a bit trashy. And it's just like Peter Cohen at Forbes says like should avoid the company at all costs, and it's just like a lot of other people are saying, well, it's just like financials don't check out.
Militaries need software, that's fine. Militaries need these kinds of things, but because we don't have transparency into what's happening, we are only every step that these companies take and contractors take is towards a world where there's algorithmic warfare that is incredibly dangerous. We need safeguards. Palantir is not going to give you safeguards. A general is not going to give you safeguards. So that needs to be something political. Then I'm perfectly happy for companies servicing those things. But as it stands, it's this very dangerous Wild West.
But let's talk about what the company would look like or what we think it would look like in 2021. Because if anybody know in 2020, predicting always work out. But we're going to do our best. So Max and Seb, let's do a little prediction in terms of Palantir. What this company will look like in 2021.
I mean, they've won the lot of contracts that they will be able to, that are long-term contracts that they'll be able to make tons of money off of with the DoD, CIA, ICE, and all of those kind of things. And I don't think that's going to go. Equally, they're kind of expanding. They've got some contracts here in the UK. But we don't know what's going on inside Palantir. The people that do, Alex Karp and Peter Thiel, both sold off a combined $400 million worth of stock, even though the share price was, not where they wanted it to be. And that might kind of tell you what they think about their future.
Yeah, I think like what the market has definitely seen is like, despite all the sexiness of surveillance state, Palantir hadn't worked a way to make money. And you can't just Uber everything, right? Some things you can Uber, other things are Uber proof. And we'll see what the defense sector is actually like, whether it's Uber proof or not. But yeah, you're right. It's totally going to depend on who's going to win the election in November. And it's gradations of less friendly, more friendly. We're not going to see the new administration just checking them out.
Yeah, that was depressing. Now,
it's the dangers of teledildonics we have for you next. It's a horrifying, horrifying story from the frontiers of sexual exploration.
We're going through a population crisis. We're short on food. Unemployment is rising. Here's a solution. Cellmate.
Yes.
Male chastity lock. They might not give you the option to, well, it doesn't give you the option to manually unlock. And if hacked, you might never be able to remove it.
From where?
Your junk. You put it on your junk and renders your junk useless until the other party decides to unlock your junk using a mobile device.
First of all, well, let's go back a little bit. And Max, explain to the folks at home what chastity lock is and give us a use case.
I'm pretty sure it's medieval in origin, but the idea is it prevents you from having intercourse, right? And it's just like, yeah, it's a nice idea, kind of like, out there in terms of kink. But like, obviously, these things never went away. They were sort of like, yeah, there's a big market for chastity locks, apparently. Cellmate is a digital chastity lock, so it can be unlocked using network connectivity, I think, in that particular case, Wi-Fi. What the creators didn't think about was security, and two independent sets of researchers found that these locks were actually ridiculously easy to abuse, and if they wanted, they could just lock everyone's junks right up.
Just for good, and there's no, manual key or something to get it out. So, yeah, the cock block gets blocked and stopped around your cock.
And according to the story we've seen, the only way to get it out is to actually use something like an angle grinder, which is obviously not the perfect scenario for your genitals.
Okay, no, here's the question then. So you, in a a bit of experimentation, try this thing out, and then it gets locked, and you get a ransomware note saying, you know, we have your bits in our hands. How much would you pay to unlock it?
I'll pay one Bitcoin. I'm just saying because I think they always do it in Bitcoin. Yeah, how much would you? That's a great question.
I reckon this is as good as some kind of, you know, like monastic pledge. So I've been, you know, like playing around with the idea of having like thinking like how much it could improve my life, you know.
So Max, what you're saying is, if I understand you correctly, is if somehow you could not manually unlock the cellmate, your little cellmate there, you will actually become a better human being and more productive in your work. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, that is what I'm saying.
You'll be a better writer. You'll finally work on your great American novel, your great British novel.
Also, Max, you don't need this thing to help you have celibacy so that you can be more productive. This podcast helps you be that celibate. Like, Jesus Christ, the things you say on here.
It's not like I wouldn't like add it to my what's its name, Tinder. Yeah, I wouldn't add it to my Tinder profile, this podcast. This is a horrible podcast if you want to date me, any of us, I think. Well, you don't want to date Tian. He's taken.
Yeah, he's taken.
Oh, well, first of all, Max, explain to the folks at home when's the last time you went on a date.
It's been a dry year, man.
You're a walking cellmate. You're you're a cellmate in the flesh.
I will chase women away from you too.
That's right.
This is, you know, an unintentional side effect of an internet-connected device or a smart device. There's equally unintended side effects happening in your local Amazon warehouse. So the folks over at Reveal, part of the Center for Investigative Reporting, they've done Will Evans is the main guy. He did a beautiful report on injury rates in Amazon warehouses. And one of the fascinating things, based on Amazon's own data that he was able to obtain, is that robotic warehouses, the ones that are more have more robots, are more geared towards robots shifting things around, moving things, are far more likely to cause injuries for humans. So like for the most common type of Amazon fulfillment center that handles the kind of the small and medium sized packages, the rate of serious injuries, and these are like, you know, really horrible ones, 50% higher if there's a highly roboticized environment.
But it's not just robots attacking people, right?
No, unfortunately, the injury reports themselves don't go into too much detail, which seems a bit of a flaw. But so it's not necessarily them driving over people or, you know, just going mad and annoyed at the stupid purchases people make. Although there was that one instance where a robot bear-maced an employee.
Seriously.
Yeah. That's a whole different story. But yeah, accidentally bear maced. It punctured the bear mace and it just sprayed all over some unfortunate worker. But in this case, what it mainly is the robots are obviously a lot faster. So they're zipping all these packages, but there are still tons of errors like we discussed in previous episodes that robots can't do, such as, you know, actually packaging and lots of the kind of fine picking things and moving kind of oddly shaped items around. And so you get this backlog where all these robots things are piling up and the humans have to keep up and they're told you need to keep up and they're tracked and said, like, you know, why aren't you keeping up with your fellow employee, this robot? So because they're working faster and they're under more pressure, they're more likely to make mistakes or get a repetitive strain injury or any of these kind of things that can cause problems.
50% more likely.
50%. Wow. Now, to be fair to Amazon, they have somewhat denied it but not provided any statistics. And also, to be fair to Amazon, they reached out to journalists on background, which is where you try and get, like, tell a journalist something sort of off the record. But you're like, you can use this, just don't say it came from me. Except they sent it out without agreeing that the thing is on background, where they essentially tried to insult the reporter and the publication and say that he can't be trusted because it's a publication that writes about workers' rights.
You might not know much, but you know that Amazon doesn't really believe in workers' rights or any sort of like organizing. And generally,
what? Really? Their TV ad says otherwise. I'm just kidding.
this episode's probably coming around like Prime Day, right? Happy Prime Day, folks. And Prime Day. Beyond the kind of immediate horror of this, I think it's something that we are going to see as, because we're in that transition phase where there are going to be more and more jobs that can partially be done by robots but can't be fully automated. And then whenever you get that overlap of humans and robots, things are going to go wrong. So even in the factories where or warehouses where it isn't heavily roboticized, it's not the nicest place to work. You know, you're tracked on how long you urinate, and you know, there are stories in the UK of employees having to urinate in bottles while they were packing things and stuff because they just didn't have time to go to the toilet. So, right. I mean, it's just a fundamental result of really, really short delivery times.
Well, apparently, according to the Wall Street Journal, the Amazon worker makes about annually $28,446 a year. So if you couple that with the fact that they're trying to automate the warehouse and the injuries rate are higher, it's just not a good combination. I'd much rather Amazon's response is not to belittle the publication, but to work with them and say, hey, what is wrong and how can we improve it, right?
There has to be an acceptance. Like, obviously, there are going to be injuries. When you employ more than like 100,000 people and you have them doing jobs, there's going to be injuries. It's a question of whether you then cover it up and try and say this isn't a problem, right, or whether you, as one of the largest and most profitable and most powerful companies hiring tons of smart people, say this is something that matters to us.
Right. I think that's the bigger thing where we all imagine this transition happens smoothly. I had no idea this piece was coming. I was just like, of course, it's going to be a harmonious transition when human and machine live together until machine, you know, start taking over the warehouses. And according to Max, maybe, you know, truck driving and things we don't want, a human don't want to do. Although, of course, those things are up for debate.
As we established in the last episode, no human person should do moderation. It should be done by machines.
Okay, we heard you loud and clear. But as it turns out, and I don't think that this is only exclusively happening in Amazon warehouses. I feel like there's probably, Amazon's big enough for people to do a report on them. I feel like going forward, it might be happening in other verticals as well. That's just my guess. Like,
there's definitely going to be, during this transition phase, a lot of pain. But how much pain is can be based on like how much of a priority safety takes.
Can you think of another industry that might run into similar problems where it might be happening right now, but we just don't know?
Oh, one of the industries that has been like a real killer for a long time is telecoms. And people never really think about that. But the...
What?
Yeah, well, exactly. So the mobile phone masts, kind of servicing them, putting them up, clearing them, making sure that like it still works, connecting wires right up top of this giant mobile mast is a super dangerous job. And lots of people have died, and it's a more dangerous job than like a lot of professions that you would generally assume would be more scary and more harmful.
So you're saying that the guy who's climbing 50 feet up to the sky, there's potential risk in his life?
Well, again, but I don't want them to die. I think risk is okay, but you should have like gear and procedure and everything else should be in place, right? It's just, yeah, you don't want to send people to like, on the off chance they might just like drop.
Yeah, I mean, it seems, you know, to make sure that someone's Netflix connection is, you know, doesn't drop below 5 megabytes a second, you send that person off to their death does seem a bit extreme. But again, like, there is always this just like, whenever you have anything at scale, someone's going to die. And it's just about, do we prioritize minimizing that chance and that number?
And for Netflix connection, yeah, we can agree and disagree, I guess. We thought it would be interesting for us, for ourselves. I don't know if this will be interesting for you listeners, is for us to talk about AI in movies. And so this is part one of our one part series where we discuss things that happen.
I'll let you do that.
the AI in movies. And so we're going to talk about basically just what we like, you know, our favorite AI in movies. Now, any movie that features some form of artificial intelligence. Now, it doesn't have to be, you know, Hyle from 2001 Space Odyssey. It doesn't have to be Mother from Alien. But as long as it includes some sort of AI, artificial intelligence, in that flick.
I'm going to choose the 1983 box office hit War Games, starring the manslaughter in chief, Matthew Broderick. A, it's a fun movie, right? He hacks into this mainframe and he's talking to this AI supercomputer. And he thinks he's playing a game, but he's actually playing a war game that could end the world, right? He could accidentally start a nuclear Armageddon. Fun movie, enjoyable. best part of it, though, was at the time, the other person who watched and enjoyed it was Ronald Reagan.
Right.
And he's like, wait, what? Right. And you remember, computers are new to people. And so he goes to his general and he says, like, I've watched this film. And, you know, this kid hacked into one of our mainframes and he accidentally, like, risked starting World War III. Could that happen? And the general's like, oh, I don't know. Right. Maybe it could. And they 15 months later, they do this big investigation and it created the first real cybersecurity directive, NSDD 145. Right. First, like, policy on telecommunications to say, like, don't just leave everything open. Don't have all your military stuff just connected to the nearest internet port. Don't just let anyone be able to get into shit and blow stuff up. And it like all our cybersecurity stuff has come out of that and that reaction.
Okay. No, but it's just like, it's not, I don't have anything profound. I didn't know it was.
It doesn't have to be profound. Profound.
Okay. So I've got literally the first thing that got into my head when you said like films about AI, which is might be counterintuitive, but like 2009 Terminator Salvation.
Wait, Salvation?
Jesus.
Terminator Salvation is a fun romp around the future that doesn't involve any present level action.
It doesn't require much of anything.
What I remember from this, and this is why this is not the AI I want to talk about. The AI I want to talk about is Sam Worthington and the idea that he was a Terminator, but he didn't know what he was. And that whole scene, and it happens like I think maybe 30 minutes into the film, where they kind of drag him in and they strap him with some chains, and it just like, and he's just like, he's he thinks he's human and he's not, and when he finds out that he's actually a machine, he's very, very angry, and he helps humans defeat Skynet. But the idea that it's just like, yeah, this is a Terminator that thinks it's human, that really struck a chord with me. I like Terminator mythology, and it's just like, obviously this is not the best Terminator film, but it's a good Terminator film.
It's not a good Terminator film.
I think Max just didn't even mention AI movie, just he mentioned the worst movie ever made. And also, I'll say this, Terminator should just end. Like, have we, when you say we defeated Skynet, have we defeated Skynet? Like, I don't even know what's going on anymore.
Some kind of futures, you know, like it's all kind of like multi-universe parallel bullshit.
Yeah, I mean, okay, so here's my pick, but I'll preface by saying this, where I'm kind of tired of machine taking over human. Mm. I personally don't think that is happening. That turned me off a little bit. I think that was cool when I was a kid. Now, when I watch Westworld, I'm like, yeah, no. The machine is not coming in five human form. Well, if they're doing that, it wouldn't be that cool anyway. My favorite is the 1979, the very first Alien, when Ash, Ian Holm character, where the whole time you didn't know he was a robot until, I mean, he's always acting a little weird, which is credit to Ian Holm's acting, until towards the end of the movie, where I guess the middle of the movie, they smashed him wide open and the gel started coming out. I remember watching it for the first time. I was very much blown away. I was like, that is probably what is likely to happen with the future, where like every ship will have some kind of android, you know, exploring the sky. But you don't have to know, right? You don't need to know it. You don't have to know it.
I mean, I think the most realistic AIs in films are not the ones you kind of see on the screen that are these characters and have these avatars that interact and are like, are they human? Are they not? Do they have a soul? Those kind of things. It's the background, like you were talking with set design and so on, is the background world. So like, again, like Blade Runner is a really obvious one, but if the AI that is interesting is the one in the background that makes all the flying cars fly and makes all the like various economics and food and or trade infrastructure or work, and you're not going to get that in the front of the movie because it's, you know, very hard to make trade deals interesting as Star Wars shows, but that's the most realistic AI.
So your favorite is trade infrastructure.
Yeah, like how does this society sustain itself? I think when you see a movie where they put the care into it, you don't just have some giant like space station and it's just there, but there's actual care, and it doesn't have to be in your face, but in the background, you know, thought has gone into like, how does this thing feed itself? How does it get powered and everything? So you know it's a fully fleshed out world.
Hey Anything else is going to be socialist, because I think AI is going to completely ruin capitalism. Dude, as soon as somebody just like hacks a system too much, because Amazon is doing it right now, but they're still like, it's still not there. But, you know, like once they realize, you know, like at any one moment, who wants to buy something and where they are, and they're going to be able to predict that, you know, that kind of destroys the economy. So how are we going to function then?
We're the 10th episode now. We went from mildly liberal to fully progressive left to like now we're like Marxist.
I'm just thinking like all the space stations you've ever seen have been socialist. That's what I think.
They're mainly about resource extraction of other people's
right.
Time.
There are good people on the internet where all of us come together in harmony and share the experience we call life. Let the good people know where we can find you online, Max.
Yeah, you can find me at Max Smolik's Twitter, Instagram, Facebook.
There are no good social media networks, but you can find me on Twitter, despairing against the world, at Seb Moss. And you can also find me on the internet and emails and all the other things by Googling me.
You can find me at Tian Chifu, TienChiFu. And I'm actually trying to use Twitter a little more, yeah. But I keep saying that, but I haven't checked, because every time I check, I follow our president, and it just gives me a headache whenever I logged in. But I want to see. I don't want to miss out.
Law and order.